Welcome to American Dream Radio. I'm Jerry Krantman. On Monday, December 13, 2004, 20 electors gathered in Columbus, Ohio, and, as expected, cast one vote apiece for George W. Bush to officially give him Ohio's 20 electoral votes. In the mind of much of the public, the 2004 presidential election is over. But not for all. Just before this meeting, some 40 Ohio voters were in the Ohio Supreme Court filing a lawsuit protesting the election results. They hoped to prevent the electors from casting those votes because of widespread irregularities in the Ohio election. The suit asked that John Kerry and John Edwards be declared the winners in Ohio. The suit said that these irregularities were so prevalent that they appeared to be intentional, and called on Kenneth Blackwell, Ohio's Secretary of State, to recuse himself from the Ohio recount, that is, to step aside because of apparent conflicts of interest. Mr. Blackwell, who this year was both in charge of assuring fair elections in Ohio and serving as the co-chair of the Ohio Bush campaign, is being accused of widespread efforts to suppress Democratic voters. On December 15, 2004, we spoke by phone with Cliff Arnebeck, lead counsel of this lawsuit, from his offices in Columbus, Ohio. This 45-minute interview is produced by American Dream Radio. Find us on the web at americandreamradio.org. We're here today with Cliff Arnebeck, lead counsel in the contest of election suit in Ohio, and the chairman of the Legal Affairs Committee of Common Cause Ohio, and the national co-chair of the Alliance for Democracy. Welcome to American Dream Radio, Cliff.
Thanks, Jerry. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Just by way of full disclosure, I should say that I am an active member of the Alliance for Democracy as well, although I have not previously met our guest. So, Cliff, you filed suit here in Ohio. Are you representing John Kerry in this suit?
No. John Kerry is the candidate who would have a right to request a recount and also the right to request or make a contest of the election. Both the procedure for recount and the contest have been implemented by others besides, not including John Kerry. In the case of the recount's been requested formally by the Green Party and the Libertarian Party candidates for president in Ohio. The contest of election has been requested and filed by 40 individual voters who participated in the election, who under the Ohio Code have a right to contest the election result.
Mm-hmm. So these are actually private citizens.
Private citizens, correct.
And you have now filed suit in Supreme Court of Ohio. What is it you're asking for?
Basically asking for the opportunity to conduct discovery to prove the allegations that we've made based upon the evidence that has been gathered. And basically the allegations are that there are so many irregularities in the election that in total they would provide... They indicate that more votes were received by John Kerry in the election in Ohio than were received by George Bush.
I'm sure that there are people thinking that, you know, elections have had stories about irregularities from the beginning of time almost. Are these worse than usual, or is this just a tactic to try to turn back the election?
Jerry, your comment is an important one. As a matter of history, the evidence in the historical record supports the view that the election of Lyndon Johnson to the United States Senate was achieved by voting irregularities, which put him over the top. The same indications are part of the historical record with respect to the election of John Kennedy as President of the United States, and that there were votes that were added, not legal votes, but, you know, extra votes added in Chicago, which put John Kennedy over the top. Now, this is the historical record. In the case of Kennedy, I think we've those who were around at the time would recall that Richard Nixon made the decision that that he would not contest the election, and felt that it was more important that the process go forward, and that there not be a, there not be at that stage of our history, that there not be uncertainty and litigation or controversy over the vote count. And indeed, that's one of the points that John Kerry cited at the time he made his concession. In this election, what it seems to be, what the evidence seems to indicate, is that the it was perceived that Ohio was going to go for John Kerry, and that the those who were responsible for the Bush campaign, it appears, decided to implement as many procedures as they could to save the election. And unfortunately, it seems as though some of those procedures, well, unquestionably, some of those procedures were illegal. And the question is, how many can be fully identified and proven for purposes of this litigation in time that a court can properly say that the election result was contrary to what was reported on election night?
Well, it seems that it would probably be difficult to find a smoking gun in all this.
Well, there are a number of smoking guns. The first one is something that was conspicuous to everyone who was here. And indeed, it was found by a federal court on Election Day, and that is that there was a gross violation of the Voting Rights Act, and people, particularly in inner-city precincts, were being subjected to extraordinarily long lines and waits. And this is not a matter of simple inconvenience. These are people who have jobs and who have depend upon their jobs to survive. So these are people who, many of whom would not be in a position to call into their place of employment and say, well, gee, I'm having a tough time voting. I'm going to have to be here another 4 hours. And, you know, voting is important to me and to society, and I'd like time off or whatever. Many of these people would simply not be in that position. So as many as 20% in some of these precincts may have wanted to vote, but were deterred from doing so because of the long lines.
Mm-hmm.
But the same situation was faced by university students, and interestingly, once again, there's some intelligent choices being made here. Universities that would be regarded as conservative or Republican in their orientation didn't seem to have a problem. It simply was the universities which were generally perceived as liberal in their persuasion, such as Kenyon College in Knox County, and this was the reason that on Election Day, November 2nd, the federal court here in Columbus made a finding of a violation of voting rights in both Knox County and Franklin County based upon the experience of the inner-city precincts in Columbus and the university precinct in Knox County of a violation of voting rights, and issued an injunction that both boards of election do everything that could be done to provide alternatives so these folks could vote without having to wait for an extraordinary length of time to exercise that important right.
Did that occur?
They said there was nothing they could do. And as far as I'm concerned, both counties are in violation of the injunction.
It sounds like a number of voter suppression tactics may have been used here.
Voter suppression tactics were used. There's evidence of a Texas strike force that was making calls out of one of the downtown Columbus hotels, calls to people who had felony records. And in Ohio, once you served your time, you're able to regain your right to vote. This Texas strike force was making calls to people, telling them if they showed up to vote, they would go back to jail, that there would be actions. They were being threatened and intimidated. Up in Cleveland and in Cuyahoga and Summit County, there's evidence and testimony that people were being intimidated by officious people coming around, challenging and making appearing in a threatening way. There's evidence of people creating confusion about where people could vote. And as an example, some of the voting locations would have multiple precincts at the same location. And they're in Summit County. There's evidence that poll workers were telling voters that it didn't matter if they were going to vote provisionally, it didn't matter which precinct in which they voted. And that was incorrect advice based upon the Secretary of State having early issued a ruling that unless you voted in the right precinct, your vote, your provisional vote would not count. There is evidence of other things that were done to create confusion about what precinct that they could vote in. And I would call this the precinct shuffle, you know, creating confusion and then as sort of a trap or a difficulty for people to exercise their right to vote.
How does this square with the Help America Vote Act? Is that
well, this obviously is not helping America vote. So if you go by the bill's title, the conduct in Ohio is an outrageous offense against the Help America Vote Act, an outrageous offense against the Voting Rights Act, an outrageous offense against the 14th Amendment of the Constitution, which is to guarantee equal protection under the law, and constitutes a civil rights violation. Under color of state law, many of these things were done under color of state law, depriving people of their civil rights.
Well, you've now filed a contest of election suit.
Mm-hmm.
What is that?
That basically is a proceeding which says not only were there irregularities, but those irregularities go to the question of the outcome of the election. And in addition to what we previously discussed, Jerry, there is evidence of what I would call vote flipping. And this is a computer technique, a computer program technique, where votes are flipped so as to achieve a outcome that's desired by the person who's programming the computer rather than the result that was desired by the people who actually voted.
When you say flipping, are you talking about when they vote for Bush, it goes to Kerry, or
yeah,
someone to Kerry to Bush? Is it reversed?
At points in time, based upon the software that's been put into the machines, the vote, the result would come up with what was desired by the programmer, and that would be done by deducting votes from one candidate and adding them to another candidate.
Well, I heard Bob Fitrakis, who is, I guess, your co-counsel in the
yes.
suit, one of your
mm-hmm.
co-counsels,
right.
that he had said that there were 77 machines that went down, and he said that they had the same malfunction, which was that if you voted for Kerry, the vote was recorded for Bush. Is that a documented error that happened there?
I think that's mixing up two separate reports.
There were
reports of machines that were where the voter voted for Kerry. Instead, the vote was recorded for Bush, and the voters complained. And then the poll worker said, "Oh, people have been having that problem all day with this machine," and they purported to have corrected it. But the indication was that this had been a problem, and how many votes were intended to be cast for Kerry, and actually, you know, that's the way the voter voted, but the machine recorded it as a vote for Bush. Mm-hmm. The 77 machine report relates to, I believe, 77 machines that were available for use in Franklin County that had these very long lines in the inner city precincts that could have been used but were not made available to relieve the congestion and allow people to vote in a more timely manner.
I see. This is American Dream Radio, and we're 15 minutes into a 45-minute interview recorded on December 15th, 2004, with Cliff Arnebeck, lead counsel for the Ohio Citizens Lawsuit challenging the 2004 presidential election outcome in Ohio. Monday, December 13th, 2 days ago, the Ohio delegation to the Electoral College cast all 20 of their votes for George W. Bush. Does this affect your suit?
We don't think so. We asked for preliminary and temporary relief on the basis that we wanted to provide the court with a way of saying that the meeting should not occur and the vote should not be cast. But under Ohio law, where a challenge is filed under the statute, the court has the power to decertify the certified candidate, in this case the electors, and certify a new candidate, or instruct the Secretary of State to certify a new candidate, which would be a new slate of electors. So, assuming, as long as the court finds, based on the evidence, that the actual vote was for Kerry rather than Bush, they would be able to decertify the electors, certify the new set of electors, and those votes would be transmitted to Congress. The Congress does not open those votes until January 6th. So what we'll be seeking from the court is an order that will set the timetable for this case so that we can comply with the federal statutory provision that these votes, the electoral votes, be received in Washington in time for the opening on January 6th.
I see. And do you have any sense of how long the court will look at your suit before they come back with an answer about whether they'll hear the case? I assume that's what you're waiting for, is it not, for them to decide whether to hear the case?
No. In normal course, a court hears the case. We filed a case in proper form. The allegations meet the requirements of the statute. We've put the election result at issue. In addition, it's not normally required that you put evidence into the record immediately at the outset of the suit, but one of the purposes for the request for an injunction is to provide evidence to show that you're entitled to the relief you requested. So we have actually put into evidence substantial sworn testimony that shows that the election result was, as we suggest, in favor of John Kerry rather than George Bush.
Hmm. I'm sure it's not easy to predict, but do you think there's much chance that the court will agree with you or find in your favor?
Well, one of the problems that we all have is having confidence in the judge that is assigned to the case. And we are going to probably make an issue of that because the governor has assigned to the case a judge that... we have some concerns about.
Well, if this judge does not find in your case, is it then all over?
Find in your favor. Under the statute, if the judge who's assigned to the case makes findings of fact and conclusions of law, and the conclusions of law are appealable to the full Supreme Court. And so that's the recourse.
The United States Supreme Court.
No, the Ohio Supreme Court.
The Ohio Supreme Court. So you're speaking to one judge at this point, but if he finds against you, you may be able to go to the Ohio Supreme Court with that.
That's correct.
All right. And what about if the Ohio Supreme Court does it? Is there a recourse after that?
This is a state procedure, and unless there were some constitutional violation in a matter of national interest, normally the United States Supreme Court would not accept an appeal from the state Supreme Court. Normally, under the state statutory procedure, the state Supreme Court would be the highest and final authority.
Mm-hmm.
So we would have had the right to a trial before a single judge and the right of an appeal to the full court. The appeal to the United States Supreme Court would be a completely discretionary appeal. Given the importance of the office, that's not to say that if there is a constitutional issue that comes up, that if we won at the Ohio Supreme Court level, that the other side would not take it to the United States Supreme Court, or if they won at the Ohio Supreme Court level, that we would not seek to invoke the discretionary jurisdiction of the United States Supreme Court.
So it's not inconceivable that the Supreme Court could decide yet another election?
Well, we would like to think that the provable facts are what will decide this election, and the provable facts are what was the vote, what was the real vote of the Ohio voters, and that particularly in view of the controversy that arose at the 2000 election, we would hope that the United States Supreme Court would not try to, in effect, decide the election by stopping the counting of the votes. And I can tell you that the Congress which is supposed to be the judge of elections if there's a dispute, that the Congress is already engaged. Representative John Conyers, the ranking Democrat on the House Judiciary Committee, mm-hmm. held a hearing in Washington, held a hearing in Columbus. And it's true that the Republican members of that committee did not participate. However, given the importance of this matter, if the leadership in the Congress is convinced that there's a real issue here in terms of the credibility and honesty of this election, I believe that there will be leaders in both parties who will step forward and say the importance of the honesty of elections in this country is too great to let it be decided by politics. The election must be decided by the actual voters. And I can envision that there will be a continuation of congressional inquiry and involvement and ultimately congressional action in reviewing the honesty of the Ohio election.
Hmm. Yeah, that would be actually sort of inspiring if there was a bipartisan effort to see that there was a fair election.
That would be. And if you recall, at another moment in history that this one is reminiscent of, the Watergate situation, if you recall, as the evidence unfolded, it was Republican leaders like Lowell Weicker of Connecticut, and there were several others. Was it Jim, James Baker of Tennessee? There were a number of Republicans who was Barry Goldwater involved in that? A number of Republicans, both on the committee and in the ultimate delegation that went to the president to indicate that they felt that he needed to reconsider his position in view of the unfolding evidence and the national interest in having confidence in the administration. It was a bipartisan undertaking in that regard. And it was very important to preserve this concept of partisanship in matters of honesty and integrity is not appropriate. There's nothing partisan about the search for truth. There's nothing partisan about combating crime. There's nothing partisan about having an honest election. These are principles that are so fundamental to our society. If you think about all the athletics and how we excel in athletics, why do we have such a wonderful athletic tradition? It's because of the sense of fairness that prevails among the fans and the athletes that participate and the referees. We have a wonderful system of honest athletic competition. And the American public simply will not accept the idea that we can just tolerate cheating in our politics.
Well, I've heard some people refer to this election and suggest that this might indicate that democracy itself is in trouble. Do you see it that way?
Absolutely. How can we go to Iraq with a straight face and say we're going to help you have an election? When, if they look at our election and say, wait a minute, just like the Ukraine, your exit poll showed one candidate winning, your tabulator showed a different candidate winning, and when that issue was raised, it was just swept aside. Why should we believe that you want to help us have an honest election? Why shouldn't we believe that what you want to do is rig our elections to get the candidates that you want? I mean, we have absolutely no credibility unless we resolve this. President Bush, Senator Kerry, whoever was elected and whoever is going to go forward to lead this country must have the confidence not only of the American people, but of the people of the world, that that person won by an honest election. That's why I've been saying President George Bush has as much of a stake as Senator Kerry in assuring the honesty and integrity of this election.
I've heard you also say, I think it was you that said at one of the forums, I've heard you several places now, that the civil rights violations that people are talking about here may actually be a red herring to throw people off the track of the real fraud in this election.
that's what the evidence seems to indicate, because the what appears to be a migration of votes at the tabulator level seems to be in an amount that was sufficient to determine the result. In other words, one does not have to say, the long line suppressed the vote, and we want to impute that there would have been 100,000 more votes for Kerry, because these were black voters who were being suppressed. We want to impute the fact that had they voted in those precincts, we would have to add, you should add 100,000 votes. And then with the 20,000 for another kind of voter suppression, that equates to the total margin between Bush and Kerry. What seems to, the evidence seems to indicate that the computer manipulation of the votes, the computer or software manipulation of the votes, was more than enough to make up the margin. So it would seem that the voter suppression activity is so grotesque that a person who was sort of putting this idea together would have had in mind that public interest groups like the ones that, with which I'm associated, would have seen this and would have been targeting that and being outraged by it, would have been litigating over that, and would have missed the computer, the hidden computer software manipulation of the vote altogether. But in terms of proving a case, and I'm not saying it's easy to prove, but in terms, once you nail down the software manipulation part of this case, you get a total which is sufficient to affect the outcome of the election. It's really a somewhat simpler case to make than the more complex analysis of voter suppression.
Mm-hmm. With something so important happening, how's the corporate news doing at informing citizens about the problems you're working on?
Well, first of all, I happen to be a fan of our media, particularly of our print media. In my experience, we have a journalistic community that is passionate and very respectful of their responsibilities in a democracy to expose fraud, to inform the public of the essential information they need to act intelligently as citizens. That's been my personal experience. Now, in this situation of this election, it seems to me that one of the problems for the media, including the print media, is that where the candidate John Kerry and the Democratic Party basically conceded and did not raise questions and did not implement recount or challenge procedures, the tendency would on the part of most journalists would be, well, if the people with the greatest stake have walked away, why should we give credence to these secondary groups that are saying, there's a problem here? It is understandable that a reporter would say, these are folks that don't have the maturity or the understanding of the process sufficient to realize that this margin is so large that there's nothing that's going to close that margin, so the intelligent thing is simply to move on.
This is American Dream Radio, and we're 30 minutes into a 45-minute interview recorded on December 15, 2004, with Cliff Arnebeck, lead counsel for the Ohio Citizens Lawsuit challenging the 2004 presidential election outcome in Ohio. Why do you think Kerry did that?
Well, I think that's the kind of report he was getting. He was getting reports that the margin is too large to close, that the provisional ballots, that the spoiled ballots, et cetera, that were going to possibly produce additional votes were not sufficient to close the 138 or 119,000 votes margin as reported in first the unofficial and then the certified election result in the state of Ohio. The other states, I think, are similar. And furthermore, he was looking at the 3.5 million or whatever the number was of the popular vote, which seemed to indicate that Bush won the election.
Of course, Bush won the election last time, not having won the popular vote.
And in the 2000 election, and this is one of the reasons it's very important not to walk away too fast from this election. In the 2000 election, if you recall, Al Gore did win the popular vote, but he also won the Florida vote, meaning that had all the votes been counted, Al Gore would have properly won the electoral votes of Florida and would have won the electoral college vote.
Now, do we know that to be true? Because the votes never got counted, did they?
Yes, they did get counted.
Oh, they did?
Yeah. The Supreme Court stopped the vote count.
Mm-hmm.
And George Bush was then anointed and inaugurated as president. It was really by judicial fiat.
Yes.
The journalistic community, and I believe it was led by Knight Ritter, the Miami Herald, I think, was the leading part of this, but it was a broad coalition of news organizations, primarily print journalism, that made a Freedom of Information request for all the ballots. And they hired professional organizations to count all the ballots. And when all the ballots were counted, the result was that Al Gore got more votes than George Bush in Florida.
I see. But once the inauguration happens, I guess it's too late to go back.
Yes, it was. The court had made a decision, and if you recall, Justice Scalia, when the question was asked, the Bush people were seeking an injunction, and so normally you have to show irreparable harm. So the question is, how could there be irreparable harm from the counting of votes? And Scalia made the statement that this could place George Bush's presidency or legitimacy in question if the counting continued and it showed that Gore won.
I see. Oh, boy.
Rather bizarre situation.
Is there any good news in this whole situation?
The good news, I think, there are a number of good pieces of good news. For one thing, out of this a controversy in Ohio, I believe we have seen a merging of the traditionally white political reform movement with the traditionally black civil rights movement. And this is an important coalescing of two major but separate movements in our country. This has been brought about by the leadership of Reverend Jackson, who, and I'm not familiar with the details of his involvement in the Florida election, but I can tell you in this election, he's come to Ohio multiple times, has shown tremendous leadership, has brought people together, who's established communication among different groups that normally would not have occurred, and has talked about building an infrastructure for the long haul to protect the civil rights of all Americans, black and white, and he's recognized that if the white political reform community, of which I've been a part, does not have the black civil rights community at its side when we talk about civil rights issues, we're not going to succeed. We're going to look foolish. And similarly, if the black civil rights movement does not have the political reform movement alongside, they're not going to be as effective. So I think there's been a coalescing of two major movements, and I believe that's going to only grow larger.
Hmm.
So hopefully this will be something that will impact our ability to get the message out and have an honest election for Ohio. But also it will have broad ramifications in all of our politics in the coming years. You know, we're pursuing in this process a three-pronged strategy. We're not simply relying upon litigation. We're also saying that we need to keep the press informed so that the press will, in the exercise of its independent journalistic responsibility, and be engaged in its own investigative reporting, trying to find out what really happened. And we also need to be keeping the public informed so that they are an audience for truth, that they will insist upon truth. And just like a football game, which has been played in front of 100,000 fans, if something fundamentally wrong has happened in the game, there's cheating and the referee didn't catch it, that the fans will not stand for cheating. The fans will not stand for a stolen election any more than they would stand for a team that cheated to win the World Series or any other major athletic competition. The other piece of this is the history of litigation in which we've been engaged in, and I'm speaking of the Alliance for Democracy and Common Cause Ohio. We've been litigating for the past 4 years against both the United States Chamber of Commerce and the Ohio Chamber of Commerce based upon their illegal use of corporate money to influence our Ohio Supreme Court elections. These two organizations spent a total of approximately $14 million of illegal corporate money to decide to influence the question of who would compose the Ohio Supreme Court. So we have now a Supreme Court that in the coming year will consist of only one Democrat, and most of the Republicans on the court will have been elected with the use of illegal corporate money overwhelming the funding and advertising available to the Democratic candidates for the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
This is a separate scandal in itself. It's a criminal conspiracy against the Constitution and the people of the state of Ohio, and it's a matter of great concern. And it makes you wonder if part of the thought process that went into the stacking of the deck, the corruption of our Supreme Court, was not in mind as this corrupt corporate activity went on over the past 4 years. And a factor in the failure of the Secretary of State to enforce Ohio election laws. The Alliance for Democracy and Common Cause of Ohio have been litigating as public interest organizations, and I should add, successfully litigating against this. But without the Secretary of State as the chief law enforcement, election law enforcement officer of the state, without him enforcing the law, it's been a very difficult battle, and while we've gotten the favorable court decisions, we've not gotten compliance. The Chamber of Commerce has continued to spend illegal corporate money to influence the elections and dominate the election process as to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, when I hear you say only one Democrat, I get the idea that Democrats are the antidote to corporate influence. But
well, not always, and I don't think even people who are partisan Democrats would claim to be perfect. But
mm-hmm.
You know, the tradition of our country has not been two perfect political parties, but it has been two respectable political parties with very significant, high-level, valuable traditions. If you're a Democrat, you look back to people like Thomas Jefferson and Franklin Roosevelt. If you're a Republican, you look back to people like Abraham Lincoln and Theodore Roosevelt and take great pride in the things that they did to help build a better democracy in this country. So both parties have fine traditions and have had a history of good leaders as president.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, we have a situation where, at the present time, it appears we've got people in leadership positions in the Republican Party who don't really believe in the two-party system that's competitive. They want domination by one party, which
mm-hmm.
is really un-American.
And they are now finding ways of packing the court with sympathetic justices?
Well, they're packing the court by basically funding the Chamber of Commerce is spending two or three times the amount of money that the candidates are spending to assure the election of their chamber-approved candidates. And it's really, just to make it clear, I'm not just saying this is illegal in a casual way. First of all, Ohio election law prohibits this. Secondly, under Ohio law, every corporation in the state of Ohio or that does business in the state of Ohio, an officer of the corporation must execute an affidavit which says in the past year, no corporate treasury money has been used for any partisan political purpose whatsoever. So the many corporations, and there are, say, 25 corporations plus each year that have been doing this,
mm-hmm.
each two-year cycle, are violating not only the election law, but this affidavit, which is executed under penalties of perjury.
And whose job is that to enforce that?
That is the, I would say, the entire law enforcement community, the governor, the secretary of state, the attorney general, county prosecutors, and we have a severe problem of lack of law enforcement in the state of Ohio at this time.
So there's complicity all the way down the line.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Any news about whether Kenneth Blackwell will recuse himself in the recount?
Kenneth Blackwell has very clearly taken the position that he's going to continue to use his powers to interfere with the fair election process in the state of Ohio.
Mm-hmm. Kenneth Blackwell being the Secretary of State of Ohio.
That's correct.
The person in charge of the election process, making sure it's fair, and the campaign manager for George Bush in that state.
Secretary Blackwell assumed two positions of a partisan nature in this election. He was co-chairman of the Bush-Cheney Campaign Committee in the state of Ohio. He was also chairman of an Issue 1 campaign. It's an amendment to the Constitution prohibiting not just gay marriage, but also any arrangement that approximates the form of marriage. And this was something that obviously was designed to help mobilize the fundamentalist kind of base.
Mm-hmm.
And it was clearly something that was a supplemental strategy for the Republican campaign for the presidency. And so he was involved in two major partisan thrusts that are part of the election in which he's performing the role as chief elections officer. And it is really, going back to the sports analogy, the idea that the referee of the game would be that heavily involved in the political manipulations of one of the teams competing in the game is really shocking.
And this is the second presidential election in a row where we've seen this.
That's correct. I mean, Catherine Harris, you know, trying to wear these two hats and looking so foolish in doing so, and really compromising the ability of the American public to have confidence in the fairness and correctness of the election process.
Well, but it got her elected to Congress.
Yeah, and at what price?
Uh-huh.
At what price? And when you think about it, there's so many things about this election. And I can tell you, as you listen, and there was a young person who came from Kenyon College and spoke before the Congress and Congressman Conyers' hearing. Here's a young man probably voting for the first time, and university students voting for the first time, based on the highest ideals of youth, coming to the voting place and finding themselves facing 8-hour lines, waits. Somebody intended this. You know, what kind of diabolical mind concocts this kind of scheme for a selfish purpose, you know, with that disregard for youthful idealism? And these are not blacks, these are whites and blacks. But I feel just as badly about the kind of mind that would do this to our black fellow citizens, exposing people in it's just outrageous. It's really obnoxious and outrageous. And if you can see the fraud that was involved in the voter suppression, people say, well, you know, this stuff about moving votes by computer is a conspiracy theory. Well, if people would be as flagrant to deny people votes in this outward way of voter suppression, why would anyone think, if the technology is available to steal the votes in a hidden way, that they would have any degree of guilt about doing that? Mm-hmm. These are shameless people.
Cliff Arnebeck, lead counsel in the contest of election suit in Ohio for the 2004 election, Chairman of the Legal Affairs Committee of Common Cause Ohio, National Co-Chair of the Alliance for Democracy. Thank you for being with us here on American Dream Radio.
Thank you so much, Jerry.
I'm Jerry Krantman. This 45-minute interview is a production of American Dream Radio. It was recorded on December 15th, 2004. Find us on the web at americandreamradio.org.